Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Good day, good week. Our conversations this week about issues in aging, topics in aging. We're going to talk with our friends from Lutheran Senior Services and demystify some issues surrounding affordable housing when it comes to senior living, when it comes to housing for older adults and living. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit right here on Faith and Family. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for underwriting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the sponsor section. There you'll find CUW there, and find that CUW logo for Concordia University, Wisconsin. Click on it. It'll take you to their page. You can find out about the programs and all the good stuff they're doing at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Go check it out, kfuo.org. Well, joining me in studio today from Lutheran Senior Services, Susan Hutchinson. She's the Executive Director for Affordable Housing. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's a good day here, and we get to talk about an important topic today, affordable housing for older adults. There are all kinds of things surrounding that. Well, I just think of housing and the cost of housing constantly going up, and thinking of the questions that someone who may be on a fixed income might have, or just, you know, not having, money to no end, housing throughout, you know, our older years can really raise a lot of questions. So I'm glad you're here today to answer those questions.
Thank you. And I'd like to demystify it and also try to eliminate some of the falsehoods a lot of people have about affordable housing as well.
Yeah. And maybe fears.
Exactly.
That folks have. What do you do as director for affordable housing at Lutheran Senior Services?
Currently, we have 687 units of affordable housing with mm-hmm. Lutheran Senior Services. And my job is to make sure that we're compliant with all the regulatory requirements, either with HUD or low-income housing tax credits, which is the majority of what we do. But I also do a lot in program development to develop services for our residents, as well as look at expansion and where we need to go to further serve our population.
Now, you used a lot of phrases in there that we're going to have to unpack. Some people, sure, really know what those mean, but some of us probably need a tutorial on some of those things that you just rolled out there for us. Affordable housing is a phrase that we might throw around, but what does it mean for Lutheran Senior Services? What does it mean today when we're talking about affordable housing for older adults?
Well, as you know, Lutheran Senior Services' whole mission is older adults living life to the fullest, and mm-hmm. that means all older adults, regardless of their ability to pay. In my case, with affordable housing, we're looking at providing safe, low-cost housing mm-hmm. for people, mostly based on their ability to pay, because even if they've reached the age of 62 and they don't have enough resources to, say, move in into a higher end, they still deserve to have a safe, dignified, mm-hmm. fun environment in order to live in that's also secure.
Safety is certainly an important thing. Dignified, that's important to have as we continue to age and mature. Fun.
Yes.
Why is that important?
Well, don't you like to have fun?
Well, does it affect quality of life?
It certainly does. We have found, studies have found across the country that when older adults move into more congregate housing, which mm-hmm. is, you know, more than one unit in a building, and they are able to interact on a daily basis with other people, that their health actually improves, mm-hmm. that their whole outlook on life is better, depression is less likely to happen, and if there's depression involved, there's a lot of physical ailments that can result from that as well. So as far as the way we do affordable housing, it's not just the bricks and mortar, it's activities, it's all sorts of opportunities throughout the day for our folks to get together with each other and with our staff so that they don't feel isolated.
Isolation, as you said, can lead to depression, and depression can lead to physical ailments, physical problems, correct, as well as problems with physical health. And so the more that we can be proactive, the more that we can be involved in community, have a sense of community and interact with others, really can affect our overall health and well-being.
Yes, it can.
And so having some affordable housing that's more than, as you said, just brick and mortar, that has a sense of community that develops, really can make a difference on the quality of life in our older years.
Right. And we try to balance the types of activities that we do in the building. I have a very small staff. There's typically only five, mm-hmm, there. They consist of a manager, a leasing associate who has to handle all of the HUD compliance stuff. But we also have a service coordinator, which is like a social worker, and then a maintenance man and a custodian. Because the staff is small, they're very tight-knit, mm-hmm, and work very well as a team. And so they will cross boundaries as to what their job descriptions are. And then there's always that anything else deemed necessary by your supervisor line. On the whole, they're very much into providing a very good life experience for, mm-hmm, the residents who live with us. So we do the bingo, but we're finding that as our population is actually getting younger instead of older, we've actually in a lot of cases have two generations in the building now. We have the 90-year-old and we have the 62-year-old. And the wants and desires of those two populations are very different. The new residents that are coming in, they want the Wi-Fi and they want the, mm-hmm, newsletter via email and all those things. And they're much more active. So bingo isn't going to cut it for them, you know. And so we do a lot of interactive things with them. We have exercise programs that serve not only the people who are probably safer in a chair to those who are very much more physically active. We partner with a lot of other organizations, primarily OASIS, which is a national organization that we're grateful are based here in St. Louis. Their headquarters is. And we've actually partnered with them over the last 10, 15 years on a number of things from music appreciation to ExerStart in a matter of balance classes. So
ExerStart?
ExerStart. It's for those folks who have had what we affectionately refer to as a sedentary lifestyle. I myself used to be a couch potato, so I understand that. And so it's a way for them to get started in an exercise program that's not frightening.
Uh-huh.
It's not overwhelming, mm-hmm, that most everybody, no matter what their physical, mm-hmm, abilities are, can manage to do ExerStart, and that gets them motivated to go on to more intense things.
So it's a way to get exercise that's not inhibited. You're everybody's welcome.
Right, and you won't need painkillers the next day.
Maybe I need to take that class because the class that I've been going to, it's good. Exercise is good. We don't, right, want a sedentary lifestyle, right, because that leads to other health issues, right, when we have sedentary lifestyle. So getting up and moving around, and I would think that most research shows that people who exercise regularly are probably just going to be happier all around too, right?
Right, right. I think that the term is it releases endorphins. Mm-hmm. Or something. I don't know. I'm not a medical person, so I don't know that. But what I do know is when I pass by a classroom where this is going on, it's not only the physical exercise that's going on. There's a lot of laughter and fun. And, you know, they're joking with each other and they're daring each other. I can do this. Can you do that? And so they're actually getting a lot more out of the workout. And the laughter is probably one of the best exercises they can do.
Now, what do you mean you walk by the classes? You
don't
just jump in?
No, no, no.
You don't jump in and join them? I would have to jump in and join them. It sounds like they have fun.
No. I do have a sense of pride. So...
Now, you mentioned other folks that are on your team at the affordable housing communities. One you said is kind of similar to a social worker,
right? A service coordinator.
Okay,
right.
And so, what are some of the things that he or she would do?
That's a position that's funded through HUD. It's a budget-based position, and their whole job is to link residents with services that will allow them to remain independent longer. So it could be a one-shot deal where they need to have an application for food stamps or some other program filled out that will help them financially throughout the month. Or it's helping them link up with a home health agency or a private duty agency to bring in some of those private duty type activities like laundry and housekeeping, things that they might not be able to physically do as well anymore. They're also there to provide a lot of moral support for folks. Plus, they have a whole component of educating residents on how to be more self-sufficient. I like to tell my staff that I don't want you being fire extinguishers. I want you to be Smokey Bear. And so we're being more proactive about doing a lot of preventative things. They're the ones that really work with OASIS on doing the health and wellness programming and getting it scheduled and making sure residents get down to it and so on and so forth.
And being the cheerleader, getting them to the to the Extra Start class.
Yes, yes. And actually, they're becoming more cheerleader than they used to be. We were very fortunate a couple of years ago to receive a grant from Enterprise Community Partners that, among other things, allowed us to purchase a telehealth kiosk so that residents could self-monitor their blood pressure, their weight, pulse ox, that sort of thing. Actually, not a week after we got the kiosk, which we put in our Village at McKenzie Place location in Afton, one of our residents came up to us and said, "I'm so glad you put this in here because I just came back from the doctor and he tells me I have to take my blood pressure twice a day and I didn't know how I was going to do that." So she was given a swipe card so that she could only access her information. There was a nurse available a couple hours a week to help her interpret what she had, but it kept a whole running total of what her blood pressure was in the morning and in the evening, and so she could track it by a graph and send it to the doctor, and they were able to, in 2 weeks, get her medication straightened around so her blood pressure was under control.
So logistically, she has this card, this key card that she just swipes, puts her arm in a machine, and it scans, or it does,
she
measures.
Actually has to put a blood pressure cuff on.
Okay, and take the blood pressure
right.
reading.
Right, it's very user-friendly. Mm-hmm. It's like healthcare for dummies. I could use it.
But as you said, there's a nurse there a couple hours each week, to help her with that, too, so that she's getting the education on how to use it and the support to use it properly.
Right, and so if anything was out of parameter, because we were able to say, you know, this was normal, this was normal, this was not normal. So if it was ever in the not normal range, alerts would be sent to the nurse and to the service coordinator. So the service coordinator and nurse could follow up with the resident to say, look, this is what we were told. We think you should either go to the emergency room or you should call your doctor, one of the two. We're not there to be medical professionals.
Sure.
But at the same point, having that extra set of eyes to help a resident self-monitor themselves has been very successful. Part of the service coordinator job in that community is to call and remind residents that they have appointments, that knocking on doors, you know, you haven't been down there in a while, do you think you should go? And as that cheerleader, we probably have 50% of the 121 units they're participating in some form or another.
Now, we're all human.
Yes. Some more than others.
Surely this service coordinator is going to encounter somebody who says, no, I don't want to do that.
Right. And if she does, you know, she the one we have there is actually very, very good. Melita has learned when to back off. Mm-hmm. It is independent living. They're not required to do this. This isn't skilled care or assisted living. So we can't say you have to do this, but she has really mastered her encouragement skills. Let's put it that way.
She's got a good success rate.
Yes, she does. And the residents trust her.
Yeah.
In this particular case, when you're dealing with an older population in affordable housing, and especially in some of the areas where, you know, your annual income may only be $9,000 or $10,000 a year, and you might not have graduated from high school, there's a certain leeriness to tell the man that you're having some issues.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Now, a lot of the residents think that we have the right to tell them they have to move for any reason we want to. That's not the way that works. There's a whole bunch of regulations we have to go to. And frankly, in the 30 years that I have done this job, I have only evicted 4 people in 30 years. So, okay, our whole job is to help them remain in an independent living setting. But they're more likely to tell a service coordinator who doesn't have the right to tell them they have to leave, which is one of the reasons we have them there, because they're also supposed to be advocates for our residents. So if they're having an issue, they now have somebody safe they can go talk to and say, I have a concern about this. Can you help me with this? And no, there aren't going to be any kind of repercussions. There wouldn't be repercussions anyway, but in their minds, they feel safer doing it this way.
So they're an advocate for the residents as well.
Right.
How, you mentioned a HUD. Just a brief explanation. What is the connection and what does that mean for this? How is that involved? It sounds like obviously government involvement. What's the connection?
It's the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And for a lot of people who don't understand HUD.
Which would probably be most of us.
Yes. There's a fear involved. Mm-hmm. They get this idea in their head of the projects like Pruitt-Igoe and all the Cabrini-Green and the huge public failures that have happened. The majority of HUD housing is not that way. In our case, we manage or own a housing that's funded under the 202 program. 202 is a section of the HUD regs that is specifically for people 62 and over. And it's labeled supportive housing for the elderly, which is a lot more friendly than HUD. Okay. It's just the sound, just supportive housing. Oh, we're doing good stuff. We are. But anyway, in our case, we're funded, most of ours are funded under the PRAC program, Project Rental Assistance Contract, and only nonprofits can run and own 202 PRACs. It's a twofold program. HUD actually gives you a grant to build the project and then gives you subsidies to help support the project. Residents only pay 30% of their income after medical expenses are deducted. So I have some residents who only pay $50 a month in rent, and I have others who pay $600 a month in rent because that's how that formula worked out for them. Mm-hmm. HUD will establish what our contract rents are every month. So let's say HUD says you can only get $500 a month on this particular apartment. If the resident is paying me $50, they'll pay me $450 to get me up to that market rent. If, on the other hand, the resident is paying $550, HUD will actually take away $50 from me. So I'll never get more than $500. Because there's no debt service on the building, there's no mortgage, it's cheaper for HUD to subsidize us because the cost of running the community is much less than it would be if there was a debt service to it. In order to live there, somebody has to be at least 62 years of age. Mm-hmm. And for a single person, they can't have any more than $23,500 a year in income to qualify to live there. And for a couple, it's I have to think here for a minute. It's around $28,000 a year. Once they move in, however, their incomes can go above that. It's only at time that they move in. And the average income for my residents is probably around $15,000 when you look at the whole 687 units. However, I've got some that are in more depressed areas. I've got one that's in the Baden community. I've got some that are in Midtown, that area. And their incomes will probably be less than that. But I've also got properties that are in Kirkwood and Afton and Eureka and Belleville, Illinois, and they tend to be more like $19,000, $20,000 a year in income. So we serve a whole wide variety.
Well, thank you for explaining that.
Okay.
That was very helpful because trying to understand how this works and what the connection is to the government and housing support and things like that. You put it in layman's terms that really helped me understand it and how
Good.
That works.
Thank
so
you.
I appreciate that. And I've been to a couple of the communities. I've been to the Hilltop community out in Eureka and right next to St. Mark's. Right there.
And St. Mark's was actually very helpful in us getting that. They actually secured the land before we ever got the grant just to make sure that we were able to get it. So.
And that makes sense, being right next to a congregation so that they can be connected to a congregation, a community, not just a you know, a residence and living, but also to be connected to a congregation if they want to be connected to a congregation.
Right, and that congregation has actually been very active in, mm-hmm. in that community, and it's because they were active right from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. It's been very helpful. I know the first year we opened, the ladies of that church actually made Thanksgiving dinner for every resident who lived there, mm-hmm. and it was wonderful.
my wife is the director of children's ministry. It serves in youth and children's ministry there, and so I know that the Sunday school kids go every year. They go caroling and they take cookies
and Easter egg hunts.
Yes,
and yes, all that good stuff. Right?
They do all the fun stuff, so I've had the privilege of getting to go with some of the kids and delivering cookies and treats for the residents there. And it's a nice community.
Yes.
It's as you said, dignified.
Right.
That's important to have a nice community in which to live so that you're connected with other residents and living a dignified life in that
right.
way.
And most people, if they have a mindset of what HUD housing looks like, they would not believe that any of mm-hmm. ours were HUD housing. They just look too nice.
Well, and I think that's where you're breaking stereotypes.
Right.
You know, that's what breaks stereotypes about housing and affordable housing.
Right.
How you've been involved not just in Lutheran Senior Services, but you're an expert in this area. You have a lot of knowledge and experience.
So people tell me, yes.
How long have you been working in this field?
I've been working with older adults for over 30 years. Most of that has been in some form or another with HUD housing. I started managing HUD housing. I'm not going to tell you when, because then I'll have to admit how old I am. I did spend some time as a service coordinator because I come from a social work background. Mm-hmm. That's actually how I started to get involved in the elderly. I was working in Kentucky. I don't sound like I'm from Kentucky, do I? That's because I'm from Cleveland originally. We won't go into that whole history. Anyway, I had started off with as a social worker in a program for homebound elderly. I did a lot of assessments for meal programs and housekeeping services and that sort of thing. And actually got into housing quite by accident. A friend of mine who was a nurse had called me to find out if a community that I actually had a lot of clients in was looking for a nurse, but it was a long distance phone call for her. And I knew the manager over there. And so I called the manager and she said, no, but you can have my job. I resigned a month ago, and they haven't found a replacement for me. And 2 weeks later, I was sitting behind her desk with no housing background at all. But they had hired me because there was some management resident relations issues, and they wanted somebody who had the people skills mm-hmm. that was capable of learning the HUD stuff. So,
and how important are people skills in the work that you do?
Extremely important.
Because you have to connect with the
residents. You do.
The residents.
I know from my own experience when I started off as a manager, I thought everybody in the building was my grandmother or grandfather. And then as I got older, they were my parents, and now they're my peers. So it's kind of scary, actually. But anyway, yes, you have to be able to connect with them. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to feel comfortable having a conversation, sometimes some difficult conversations. You know, I've had managers in the past that they didn't last with me very long, that had the attitude that I'm the boss and you're going to do as I say, and it caused some major upheaval in the community to do that. So I have been very careful about matching personalities to the buildings now.
Mm-hmm.
I have 9 different communities, and there's 9 different environments.
Mm-hmm.
And I really need a manager who can relate to the resident population that they have. And I think at this point, I've been very successful in doing that. So, because we have very high resident satisfaction rates there.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Well,
and I want to talk about some of those communities. I want to talk about those when we come back. We need to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about where those locations are and who qualifies and those types of things. And what's the fun stuff going on? You said not a lot of bingo, maybe some bingo, but we'll talk about that when we come back. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Multiple studies show as many as 90% of parents who receive prenatal diagnoses of Down syndrome abort their babies. This is appalling. So the Pennsylvania legislature is considering a bill to require doctors to give these parents fair and balanced information, including the positives of children with Down syndrome. The Pennsylvania Medical Society objected, saying it's an intrusion into the physician-patient relationship. But based on the stats, most doctors are giving bad information, and babies are paying with their lives, so there needs to be intervention. Besides, there are requirements that physicians face every day designed to protect patients. Why do they think this one's different? Opposing doctors need to be more concerned with the well-being of their unborn patients.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Wednesday, May 21st, 2014. Today's day sponsor is Barb Prince. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in thanks to God for the short ministry of Reverend Gary A. Prince. Once again, we say thank you to Barb Prince of St. Peter's, Missouri, today's Worldwide KFUO Day sponsor.
Hello, I'm Rod Zwanitzer, Director of Broadcast for KFUO. We totally depend on the gracious supporters who want this gospel voice to continue and expand as the messenger of good news of Christ. A wonderful part of this support is our underwriters, an ever-increasing number, and so we ask you to find out who they are by checking them out on our website or as you hear them here on KFUO. Write, call, or tell them how much you appreciate their support of Worldwide KFUO.
Facebook is one of the biggest social media instruments for checking out what is going on with Worldwide KFUO. On our Facebook page, facebook.com/KFUO radio, you'll see us posting pictures, online videos, show information, as well as reviews and previews of events at KFUO. Worldwide KFUO, we are where you are, on Facebook at facebook.com/KFUO radio. The worldwide leader of confessional Lutheranism, Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Family Research Council President Tony Perkins is predicting a broad societal rejection of court-imposed same-sex marriage.
Nature and nature's God cannot be usurped by the edicts of the court.
The evangelical activist spoke after a judge overturned Pennsylvania's ban on gay marriage. Federal Judge John Jones refused to stay his ruling, triggering a rush by same-sex couples to obtain marriage licenses.
We didn't want to, you know, take the chance of having this be challenged and missing out on our opportunity.
In his ruling, Jones said laws defining marriage as a husband and wife should be thrown into the ash heap of history. But Perkins said traditional marriage is rooted in biology as well as history.
We will never accept the court's assertion of a right to change the definition of our most fundamental social institution. The courts can ignore natural law or even suppress it, but they will never succeed in subduing it.
I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking about topics and issues in aging. We're talking with Susan Hutchinson. She's a Lutheran Senior Services Executive Director for Affordable Housing. And before we went to the break, in the first segment, you really demystified some of the concepts around affordable housing, especially mm-hmm. that connection to government and other agencies, and helping me understand, and hopefully our listeners as well, that it's more than just brick and mortar, that there's a sense of community, there's staff there to really make living, well, what your motto is, living life to the fullest,
right.
To really make it that it's not just I'm getting an affordable apartment that I can live in. It's not just, you know, something that I can afford, that I, the cost to live in. There's more to it than that.
Right.
It's more than just a housing type setting. There's community, there's people who care.
Right. Exactly.
We were talking briefly before we went to the break about some of the locations where LSS, Lutheran Senior mm-hmm. Services, has affordable housing. You mentioned you have 9 locations, is
nine
that right?
9 locations, exactly.
Around the St. Louis area, what are those 9 locations again?
Okay, we actually manage 3 properties, Hilton Point and Hilton Point 2. They're close to University City. They're on Delmar, mm-hmm. Right behind where Connect Care used to be. We also manage Centennial Plaza, which is in the city close to SLU at McPherson and Sarah. Mm-hmm. The ones that we own one in Baden, Halls Ferry Manor. It was actually the first one that we built and learned from. I guess it's a good way to say it. Every time we build a new one, we ask the residents from the last one, what do you like better?
Sure.
What would you like better so we could change it? The next one was Dunn Road Manor. It's up in Florissant. Mm-hmm. We have Rose Hill House, which is in Kirkwood. And it's actually, HUD, it's 2 different buildings. The original building was 67 units. And then a number of years ago, we added another 30 units attached to it. When you look at the building, it looks like just one.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Hilltop Manor. That's out in Eureka. Westfield Manor is in Belleville, Illinois. And then our newest one is the Village at McKenzie Place, which is a totally unique way of doing housing. We took the old Afton High School, keeping in mind that the new Afton High School was built in 1968. So I think this building was built in the 30s, and we got it put on the historic Register mm-hmm. of Historic Buildings, and we got historic tax credits to turn the original high school into 20 market rate units, because we needed to serve a more moderate income as well. We were really good at serving those who have money and those who don't have a whole lot of money, but that gap mm-hmm. where most of us lay,
right? Yeah,
we needed to be able to serve that population, so. The high school did that. We took what had been the gymnasium and now have this very gorgeous 6,000 square foot community center that Mideast Area Agency on Aging actually moved their Afton Senior Center to that location. So they do the meals 5 days a week and provide a lot of the programming, and they're a blessing to have on site. That was also the community where we first dipped our foot into the water of low-income housing tax credits. It's both federal credits and state credits, that there's no subsidies attached to it, but I call it rent control. Missouri Housing Development Commission tells us how much we can charge on the rents, and we have to ask them if we want to raise it. The income limits to live in there are a little bit higher. They're like around $29,000 for a single person and around $33,000 for a couple. The units are bigger. In both the historic and in the tax credit wing, all utilities are included in the rent, and they have a washer and dryer, a dishwasher, a microwave. They're really, really nice. Really nice.
Now, I have to ask, since you built in a old high school,
mm-hmm.
are there lockers?
Not anymore. As a matter of fact, we were kind of glad. It used to be a sheltered workshop before we bought it. We didn't buy it from the Afton school system. And they had already removed uh-huh. all the lockers because of the historic tax credits. We would have had to keep the lockers if they had already been in there. We had to keep all the classroom doors and stuff, so, which was kind of interesting. We had to figure out a way to cover the windows permanently so people couldn't look in and that sort of thing. So, those apartments are gorgeous, 12-foot ceilings, 8-foot windows. They're just, you know, really, really nice. And then HUD, these PRAC grants that I talked mm-hmm. about earlier, HUD is actually no longer doing those, and in their not so infinite wisdom, they decided it wasn't a good way to do business. I haven't quite figured out why, but anyway, we got probably the last 2 PRAC contracts to build an additional, in 2 phases, 67 units of HUD subsidized housing there. So there's 121 units in total. We were a little concerned that because you had these different income levels in the same building and they were physically separated from each other because of the way we built the building, that there would be some them and us going on. And we were delightfully pleased to hear that that didn't happen. I think having the community space right in the middle of the building where everybody goes was helpful. All the mailboxes are close to where the HUD sections are, so people are being forced to intermingle. But what we also found out is, you know, one friend would live in the tax credit, another one would live in the historic, and then their sister would live in the HUD. So they were all, you know, really nice. And it really surprised me how little affordable housing there was in the Afton area, because Afton has the highest per capita number of Social Security recipients in the state.
That was my next question. Yes. What is the need here in the St. Louis area?
It's horrendously high, at least from my vantage point. We have 687 units, and I have somewhere close to 700 or 800 people on waiting lists when you combine them all together.
Wow.
At the Village of McKenzie Place, just the 34 units of low-income housing tax credits have like 170 people waiting to get in. So that tells me there's a huge need mm-hmm. for that, especially in that area.
Certainly. Well, St. Louis, what, ranks fifth in the nation for...
I've heard that, yes.
...for the number of Social Security recipients.
Right.
I'm going to guess that Florida's probably somewhere on the upper end of that list.
Oh, I think they're probably top, yes. Yes, yes. But the fact that you're competing with California, which has a huge mm-hmm. population, and Florida, and we still come in ranking fifth, it tells you an awful lot. St. Louis... metropolitan area in general is aging pretty quickly.
And we're just a friendly place to be.
Yes, we are. Well, I chose to live here. I wasn't born here. I moved here.
That's right.
By choice.
You moved here. Ohio, Kentucky, St. Louis.
Ohio, Kentucky to here, yes. And this is now home. This is where my husband is. So yes, it's home.
Now, you mentioned you have a waiting list of over 700.
Right.
Who qualifies for affordable housing? How you mentioned the income
right.
As being one qualifying
right.
factor. Is that the main thing for qualifying?
It's the income and the age.
I see.
As I mentioned earlier, the HUD subsidized income limits are lower than what the low income housing tax credits are, and those limits are established by the median income of the metropolitan St. Louis area. So it doesn't matter what's going on in California. It doesn't even matter what's going on in Columbia. It's all what's happening here. Huh. And then for the HUD, it's 50% of that median income. And for the low-income housing tax credits, it's 60% of that income. And so it'll fluctuate from year to year. The last couple of years, it's actually gone down, except in the tax credit building. We were lucky to get our tax credits when we did, because then they froze us at whatever level we were at. So as the income limits went down, we didn't have to lower ours. Anyway, there's an application that needs to be completed. We ask basic information like, who are you? Where do you live? Mm-hmm. Telephone number, social security number, because we do criminal and credit background checks on everybody, including sex offender. HUD requires that there be a national sex offender search. And we actually do that every year on all residents, because that's an evictable offense if you've been placed on the lifetime sex offender list.
Sure. Yeah, you want to make sure your communities are safe.
Right, right. As we explain to prospective residents, we want to make sure that you're safe within the building. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to vet anybody who comes into it to make sure that they're not only going to be good residents, but good neighbors mm-hmm. as well.
Right, right. Yeah, you want to have good neighbors. And certainly that's doing that kind of... that work
right.
is important.
Right.
What are the changing needs of our of older adults? You were talking earlier about, you know, in some of your communities, you've got kind of two sets, two
right.
generations of aging adults. You've got the 90s, upper 80s and 90s generation, but you've also got the 60 to 70s.
Right, right. And this program isn't long enough to discuss those changes.
Well, you were talking about, you know, when you're talking about community activities and things
right.
like that, that it's not just bingo.
Right, right. And it's not just the activities. It's the level of need that mm-hmm. our residents have of staff time. The newer residents are tend to be a lot more self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. Probably because some of them are even still working at this point. They're more tech savvy. Whether it's because of them or because of their kids, I have no idea. I happen to be one of those tech geeks that just the newest thing that comes out, I have to have it. So, whereas my husband, who is 10 years older than I am, I joke with people that he thinks computers are a passing fancy, so that he just doesn't think they're going to hang around all that long. So it's interesting. Anyway, so you know he's still
it's a trend.
Yes, it
away.
Is. Yes, it is. Don't ask him to text; he wouldn't have a clue. So. But you know, what we're finding is in our older residents, they will either call or come down to write a work order, and our younger residents will email us mm-hmm. that, you know, something's not working in their apartment or whatever. It's a challenge, particularly for some of the managers I've had for a long time, because they're used to dealing with a certain level of... I'm feeling needed, I guess, is probably
sure.
a good word for it. Mm-hmm. And they're not necessarily getting that from the younger residents, so it's at times a bit of a challenge for them to redirect themselves to being able to answer the needs of whoever may be in there. Yes, Extra Start will probably not be sufficient for this newer level of residents that are coming in, because a lot of them have gym memberships.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a lot more walking groups, and we're not talking just walking around the building. They want to go to a park where they can get some hills and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. What I am finding, however, and I find this, maybe it's because of the type of folks that we attract in our communities, that a lot of the younger residents are now helping to support emotionally the older residents. I think there have been a lot of non-legal adoptions going on. The majority of our population is female. I'm sorry, women tend to outlive you guys. And so I'm seeing a lot of mother-daughter type relationships mm-hmm. that are starting to be created, and that's really nice to see. Some of the younger ones that still drive and are taking the older ones that don't drive, mm-hmm. you know, places and kind of watching out for them. It's nice to see.
But developing that camaraderie, that friendship, that
right.
and that sense of community and,
right.
and caring for one another and some accountability, I would think, too.
Right. Well, it used to be when we had a new resident move in, I would tell them, welcome to the neighborhood. And now I'm more likely to say welcome to the family, because my biggest fear was when you started getting these multiple generations in here, that feeling of family would start to go away, and I think it's been strengthened by
you're an intergenerational
right.
family in a
right.
sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense that they're making that connection and that they're spending that time together doing those things, like
right.
you said, the walking groups.
Right.
Earlier, you mentioned when you build a new community, that you ask questions from the ones, you know, you ask
right.
questions. What would you like, or what would you do differently?
Right.
What are some of what are some of the things that you've learned from residents over your time at serving at Lutheran Senior Services?
The first, actually, at Rose Hill in the first, or at Hallsbury Manor in the first Rose Hill, we put in apartment size stoves and. That didn't go over real well. They want to be able to cook.
This is a generation that,
mm-hmm. and so we ended up putting in the larger stoves. We did some redesign on the apartments to make it a little bit more accessible for folks. A lot of it had to do with public area space, and now we're getting a lot of requests for Wi-Fi and that sort of thing, because it's not only for the residents, but the residents' families that come in mm-hmm. to visit. You know, I've never seen a kid that didn't have either a smartphone or a tablet with them, and to keep them occupied, they want to be able to connect them to the internet, and so we're now looking at putting hotspots in all the buildings.
Well, and I think internet probably would be important for those who want to use it to stay connected to family and loved ones around
right.
the country. I mean, we used to live in a society where if you moved 20 miles away, you were a rebel.
Right.
Now we move all around the country, all around the world.
Right.
Our jobs take us all over the place.
Right.
So as we're becoming, you know, as we're maturing and aging as adults, we've got family all around the country, all around the world. We use technology to stay connected, and not just email now. We use technology for video chat,
right.
Things like Skype and
right.
FaceTime and things like that, where you're going to need internet access. And,
right.
And a pretty decent bandwidth. You're going to need, pretty strong signal. You're not going to get away with just a small signal or something,
right.
A small bandwidth. You need a pretty good internet connection in order to do
right.
these
well,
things.
We've always had internet connected computer centers for mm-hmm. all our residents, and for primarily that reason. Although I did have one resident who, this was a number of years ago, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And before she went to the surgeon, she was on the internet and researching everything she should ask her surgeon before she went. And she would not have been able to do that on her own because she didn't have any mm-hmm. kind of internet connection. So that alone makes it worthwhile for me. But again, it's hardwired to the computer. People want to be mobile with it.
Sure.
And so we probably won't be able to put it in the entire building, but we can put it in a lot of the public spaces.
Well, yeah, this is the day and age where you take your mobile device or an iPad or a tablet of some kind, and you're Skyping or video chatting on
right.
that, and you're showing them your new digs, showing
right.
them your apartment, your home, and it can't be
yeah.
hardwired.
Well,
I
did that myself. My dad, who actually passed away at 89, he lived a long good life. He had, because of some mobility impairments and the fact that they live 600 miles away, had never seen the house that I lived in here. And so when I got him all set up on Skype, I walked around the house with my iPad so he could see mm-hmm. everything in my house, including some of the antiques that had been passed down through the family and where they were at and what condition they were in. And he felt a whole lot better about his little girl being 600 miles away after that. And I was like 58 at the time, so...
Would you say that most of that this next generation that's coming into affordable housing is really tech savvy?
Yes.
Is very comfortable with using
yes.
technology like that?
Yes, very much so.
And so that's one of those changing needs. Are there other things that you said they're probably more, maybe more so independent or because of that technology, that they wouldn't necessarily make a phone call, or not as likely to make a phone call. They're more likely to email or
right.
to go, as you said, as that one resident, to go look up and research
right.
all these questions to ask her
exactly.
surgeon before a surgery.
Exactly.
Are there other things that you see that are changing?
They're also looking for more active lifestyles. We have a couple of buses that take residents primarily grocery shopping every mm-hmm. week, although we tell the residents you can choose where you want to go and we're finding those locations are getting different now.
Mm-hmm.
They're being more adventurous as to what they want to go do, and some of it involves a lot of physical activity once you get there. I find it fascinating, actually, that we're very willing to adjust to meet those requests.
Now, is this next group that's coming in, are they the ones that are more likely to be out and about and not necessarily cooking at home and making the big meals, don't need the full-size
yeah,
stove?
Yeah, there's a lot of microwaving going on, yeah.
Because I'm thinking about my parents' generation, and certainly a generation that grew up cooking a lot, but that was also the generation where the microwave was introduced, and it kind of freaked everybody out at first when...
No, I like my microwave, sorry.
Well, yeah, they were all scared at first. You know, I remember growing up with the first microwave in the home, and everybody was kind of scared of it. We weren't sure. But man, we got used to it really fast,
yes,
didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Definitely.
And then we got used to fast food really fast.
Unfortunately, you're right. We did. I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot of fast food restaurants. Well, I take that back. I think every one of them has a fast food restaurant almost within walking distance, come to think of it, from our communities. There's still a lot of really good cooking going on,
mm-hmm.
judging from the smells that I get when I walk in the door.
Now, do you get invited over for dinner?
I don't get invited over for dinner, but I sure get invited to a lot of potlucks and prayer breakfasts, and if you feed them, they will come.
Sure.
Type of thing.
Right, right.
So.
Well, you all do. LSS does a lot of a great events with food.
Yes.
I don't know what it is with food, and you all do all kinds of fun stuff.
Right,
the benevolent
right.
care
right.
event with food and the brunch and all those fun
right.
things. Well, do you get to have a lot of fun with your work? I know there's a lot of technical stuff, and you got to deal with all the details and that sort of thing. Do you get to have fun too?
I wouldn't do this job if I didn't have fun. You know, you can't do something for 30 years and have the kind of smile on my face that I've got,
right,
unless
yeah.
you really liked what you were doing. Yes, there's some technical stuff, and there's a lot of eye rolling that goes on when you get a new reg come down. Go, why? Who thought of that one? But I have a huge affinity for older adults. That was developed long before I ever started working with them. And I maybe it was in the back of my mind that I knew eventually I would be one and that I wanted to make sure that my life was going to be good. So why not make everybody else's mm-hmm. life good?
Sure.
The residents that we work with love to laugh. They love to have a good time. They have a world of knowledge behind them, not necessarily book learning, but life learning, mm-hmm. and are very willing to share it. As long as you're approachable to them, you know, I'll walk into a building and everybody knows my name. I can't say I know all of theirs because there's a lot of them and only one of me. But I know about their grandkids, or I know about mm-hmm. you know what was going on last week with them, and that's what I like. And then, as far as my staff, I look at myself as more as a mentor and facilitator for them, because I can't be in their arena mm-hmm. every single day. I have to do a lot of things remotely. I have to trust them to be able to make good decisions and to treat people well, golden rule and all that. So that when I go and have meetings with my staff, it's more like, how can I help you develop? You know, what are your dreams? What do you want to do? Mm-hmm. We're right now going through a big strategic planning mode because affordable housing is changing, you know, with the fact that HUD isn't doing what HUD used to do, and tax credits are becoming more difficult to get. You know, what other ways can we do what we do and serve the people that we need to serve? And I can't do that in a vacuum. So mm-hmm. so I have my staff and I sit down and we talk about these things, and I love stuff like that. I told my boss a long time ago, I'm a dreamer, I'm a creator. I love to put new projects on and then hand it off to somebody to run it and then let me go dream something else. And LSS has been very, very supportive of me doing that. And that's probably the primary reason I love what I'm doing, because I love the mission, I love the people we serve, and I love having a creative outlet mm-hmm. to what I know.
And that's apparent in as you see, as we can, as I can see your eyes light up when you talk about these things. Earlier, you mentioned that there is a waiting list, but for those who are interested in finding out about affordable housing through LSS, what's the first step?
They really need to call my main office. They need to call 314-968-9313 and ask for my assistant, Liz Bodie. She is the keeper of the waiting lists. Each individual community has their own. So I've got some who have as little as 4 to 10 on a waiting list, and then I've got others like Mackenzie who have a huge one. However, you need to understand when we have a vacancy become available, we may have to go 50 people down that waiting list before we find somebody who is ready to move.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So don't let the size of the waiting list scare you. I've had people who have been able to move in a month or two after they've signed up because the people ahead of them weren't ready to go mm-hmm. at that time.
And what was that number again?
It's 314-968-9313 and ask for Liz Bodie.
And can they also find information on the website, lssliving.org?
Yes, lssliving.org. There should be a link to affordable housing, and within that link, there should be individual links to each one of the communities.
Sure, yeah, they're all on here and all over the place, as you were mentioning earlier, all over around the St. Louis area.
Right.
And so you can find out more at lssliving.org, or you can call the office at that number again. And one more time.
314-968-9313.
And ask for Liz.
Liz Bodie.
Bodie. Very good. Well, we've been talking with Susan Hutchinson, LSS Executive Director for Affordable Housing. Susan, thanks so much for being our guest today here at Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
You're welcome.
It's been a lot of fun chatting. I've learned a lot. Hopefully our listeners have as well. And to find out more, go check it out, lssliving.org. And tomorrow we've got more conversation. We're going to talk with another friend from LSS Living, and we're going to talk about, my mind just went blank. I know we're going to talk about more topics, more issues in aging. So, oh, your personal file cabinet. Yeah, we're going to have that conversation tomorrow. The forms that you need to have. So stick around for more Moments of Assurance up next on Listener Supported Worldwide, KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.